In a global industry where anything can happen, where mistakes cost much more than dollars, we bring you expertise from around the world to ensure that everyone goes home safe every day. The internationally acclaimed Oil and Gas HSE podcast starts now with your host, Russell Stewart.
Hey, everybody. So before I introduce my guests on the podcast today, a couple of things. I'm coming from the Fontainebleau, the historic Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami, at the invitation of Prairie Operating Company. And this podcast may be a little shorter than what they normally are, but it won't be any less informative or entertaining and enlightening, because the two guests I have on my show today are, first of all, Ed Kovalik, who is the CEO of Prairie Operating Company. And then also have Alex Epstein, who's a speaker and an author. We'll get into Alex's introduction more in just a moment, but I want to start with Ed, because Ed, graciously, you've invited the Oil and Gas Global Network to your conference today. And you made a presentation this morning, which was very informative. Today, we're going to be talking about the E in HSE, because some of the things I heard you say about your environmental practices and responsibilities are something that those are the kinds of things that we like to tout on the show. So just real quick, give us the Prairie Operating Company elevator speech.
Sure. Well, from an environment perspective, since we operate in Colorado, we're forced to be the best possible, you know, E side of the HSE piece in terms of operations. Colorado regulations are arguably the most stringent in the country with respect to the level at which we have to operate, the measures we have to perform under. And so we pride ourselves on that. We think we're ahead of the country, and we even surpass what those obligatory levels are from the regulators. But Prairie's plan is very simple. We're an unlevered company. We don't believe that debt and an oil and gas business really marry well together. And so we're unlevered, and we intend to stay unlevered. And we're also high growth oriented, really looking to live within cash flow, but reinvest 100% of our revenue, less our G&A, into growth.
Check them out, folks. We'll put their information in the show notes, but this is a really, really great company. And so, Ed, I'm an old grandfather. I got young grandkids, so, you know, boys. So we tell, you know, dad jokes. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you call an elephant that doesn't count? Irrelevant. But I'm also the guy who never fails to point out the elephant in the room. So let me just get right at it based upon your presentation this morning. This idea of net zero by 2050, that's a fantasy, isn't it?
It's absolutely a fantasy. It's inachievable under any imaginable set of scenarios. There's simply just not enough critical minerals to fuel that. There's not enough capital, even if the Fed goes nuts and prints $1 trillion a month, to actually support increasing the grid by 4x during that period of time, support mining all the minerals that are going to needed. Not to mention the fact that if we actually did that, the knock-on effect would be a massive increase in slavery around the world, because currently a lot of slavery actually fuels extraction of these minerals.
Oh, wow. That's something that I've never thought about, but something that you did say this morning, and this is, I think, something that people aren't aware of. 40% of the world still cook their food over animal manure. Now, how good is that for the environment?
It's pretty bad. And, you know, hay, and obviously there's been a large growth in coal as well. And so really, when people step back and really appreciate where the rest of the world is in terms of energy utilization, Scott pointed out earlier, the amount of energy we all utilize to just get ourselves to this event is more than the developing world consumes in a year.
Wow.
On a per capita basis.
And so, in fact, two more things, and I know we're stressed for time, and these guys have been fielding this kind of stuff, doing this for the last 2.5 hours, so I know you're tired, but you used an expression that I'm actually going to steal, because we have certain expressions we use over and over again on the podcast. This is one that's going to become part of the portfolio. We're not really talking about energy transition. We're talking about energy addition when we talk about renewables, right?
Absolutely. I think it's a bold-faced lie to suggest that we can in any way transition our current energy utilization to solar and wind. by 2050 or really in our lifetime or your children's or grandchildren's lifetime. And so really what we're seeing every year is just more and more increasing demand because the rest of the world is trying to pull themselves out of energy poverty. They want refrigeration. They want electrification of, you know, everything in their life the way we have, like air conditioning, for example. They want a higher standard of life. And at the end of the day, you know, that's going to add more and more demand for energy, all forms of energy, for as long as humanity flourishes. So the notion that we're capable to transition away from all baseload energy today is fantasy, it's a lie, it's whatever you want to call it, but it's so grossly unrealistic as to, you know, not be credible.
That's exactly right. And once again, thanks for having OGGN here in Miami. Thanks for doing this. I hope we can maybe sit down some other time when we have more time and we can talk about all of this some more. I want to move over to Alex. Alex, one of our sayings on the show, he who tooteth not his own horn may never hear his own horn tooted. And so we're always wanting to toot the horns of our guests. So for the sake of my audience, tell us who you are.
Sure. So my name is Alex Epstein. I am a philosopher and energy expert. So my main focus is how do we think logically about energy, environment, and climate? And I think most people think about it in a way that makes no sense at all and is pretty easy to point out. So, I mean, basically what I do is I look at it from, you can call it a big picture perspective or a full context perspective. With all forms of energy, I look carefully at both the benefits and side effects. And I look at them from what I call a human flourishing perspective. So the perspective that our goal should be a world where as many people as possible have the opportunity to have long, healthy, opportunity-filled lives. And I think if you look at it from that perspective, fossil fuels are uniquely valuable for the foreseeable future.
Okay, so before we run out of time, because I know we're pressed for time on this, tell us about your book.
Okay, well, the book is Fossil Future, which basically makes that point. And I would just say one other point. And if people want to see a really quick summary of my views, go to the website, energytalkingpoints.com.
Okay, we'll put that in.
That covers every issue you could ever imagine for free. It's used by hundreds of political offices, et cetera. I would say people should in particular pay attention to my view on climate, because my view is fossil fuels didn't take a safe climate and make it dangerous. They took a dangerous climate and made it safe. And so actually the way we think about fossil fuels and climate is backwards. Fossil fuels have created a climate renaissance, not a climate crisis, because our ability to master climate and make it safer using fossil fuels is far more significant than any new climate challenges caused by fossil fuels.
Well, you just answered my next question, because I've been listening to you here for the last 2 hours, fielding all these questions and everything, but your concept of course, we always hear about climate change and mm-hmm. all that sort of thing, and your expression climate renaissance,
yeah.
I find that really fascinating, especially along the lines that you're saying, hey, we have climate challenges, but we're much better equipped to deal with these climate challenges if we have the freedom and the energy to do it,
exactly.
Right? Rather than what they're trying to do right now.
Right. So the simple thing is climate mastery is more important than quote unquote climate change. That's why we're safer than ever from climate. So the state of livability of a climate is a function of what's the physical state of the climate system and what's your ability to master it. And history shows us physical state of the climate system is always disadvantageous to human life, has opportunities, has negatives. The more you can master it, the more you don't care. That's why we can live to 80 in any climate in the United States. What are we going to be afraid of going forward?
Well, folks, I think we're going to wrap it up here, but I think you can tell I was right. Even though this was a very short interview, there's a lot of information impacted in here, and thanks everybody for listening.
Tune in next week for another engaging episode of the Oil and Gas HSE podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.